Before we get to the interview, I'd like to take a quick moment to talk with you about a need we have. As we've mentioned in the middle of our podcasts for the last few months, we're working on a project to raise a little over $20,000 this year to help us conduct small church pastor workshops in Indonesia, Malaysia, Austria, Switzerland, and Germany. So far, we've received about $15,000 through your generosity. Now, once we're on the ground in these places, most of the costs for food, transportation, and housing will either be very minimal or will be provided by local churches. So the bulk of the costs are to help us get there. It's for airline fares. So here's our current challenge. In September, we leave for Malaysia and Europe, but we need to buy the airline tickets now. And the funds we currently have are approximately $5,000 short. So if you can help, go to karlvaders.com/support and donate any amount you're able to. And please be sure to give us your contact info so we can thank you for your generosity.
You can't argue with something that says we want to meet individually with as many people as possible.
Hi, I'm Karl Vaders, and welcome to the Church Lobby, conversations on faith and ministry. My guest in this episode is Luke Simmons, and we'll be talking about a very specific goal that he and his church elders are attempting to reach that they hope will help make their large church feel small. Luke is not our typical Church Lobby guest. He pastors a church that has recently passed 2,000 in average attendance. But Luke and I follow each other on X, you may know it as Twitter, and recently he mentioned something there that he and his elder team will be attempting this year. They have a plan for the members of their elder team to meet one-on-one with 1,000 church members over coffee or a meal in the coming year. By that, they hope to increase the relational depth of their congregation, so they're reaching out deeper rather than trying to get bigger. And I thought that was worth having a conversation over. And don't forget to stick around when the interview is done. I'll come back with a quick take on why focusing on numerical growth can lead to heartache and what to do instead. Well, Luke Simmons, welcome to the Church Lobby. It's good to have you here today.
Thanks, Karl. I love the work you guys are doing, and it's fun to be here.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're meeting still virtually, but a little closer to personal now because you and I have interacted on X. You've actually contributed an article that I read from X and turned into an article for my blog. So I've appreciated your contribution already. But before we get to the main subject for today, which people have already heard about in the cold open a little bit, we met originally, if you could say met, on X, and I have appreciated your wise and balanced approach in a place where wisdom and balance is not usually the hallmark of conversations on X. So before we do get to that main subject, tell us a little bit about who you are and about your ministry journey and where you are ministering today.
Yeah, thanks. I'm originally from Denver, Colorado, but have been in Phoenix for almost 25 years, really my adult life. Played college baseball at University of Illinois and then had a friend that was out here doing ministry. He was leading a college ministry at a growing large church. And I was kind of ministry curious and thought, I don't know if I have enough of a sense of calling to like pursue ministry. But he said, why don't you come out here and just see what you can learn? And so I was part of this very large, very healthy, very dynamic church. It's interesting, especially thinking kind of small church, large church. I had come from a very small church in college. And what I realized very quickly was everything that actually mattered was the same about this 120 person church that I had just came from in college as this 4,000 person church. You know, integrity of leadership, good Bible teaching, really heartfelt community, a concern for the neighborhood. Like everything that actually mattered was the same. And a ton of stuff that didn't matter was wildly different. But anyway, so kind of cut my teeth there, just volunteering and serving in the ministry. And then eventually got brought on that church as an intern, led in some adult ministry and small group men's ministry type spaces. So I've actually never done youth ministry. So kind of a rare church planter, lead pastor who never did youth.
Yeah, me too.
And after, after 4 or 5 years on staff there, that church had a vision to plant churches. And so they sent us and about 50 adults from that church, most of whom did not know each other. It wasn't like a hive off. It was more like just people that were driving 30 minutes to be part of a more regional church that said, we'll come here, but our neighbors won't. And so they sent us out to plant in 2009. And we've grown slowly and steadily along the way. A few little spurts here or there, but nothing out of control. But just each phase we get to is a phase that I have never led through before. So I feel like I'm learning and growing a lot, even having now been in pastoral ministry for 20 plus years.
Yeah, I loved your comment earlier about the big small stuff because I think the way you phrased it is so much of what this ministry is about. The things that really matter should be the same in churches of all sizes, and I believe are the same in all healthy churches of all sizes, the things that matter. But the things that we talk about are some of them are the things that don't matter, and we get into arguments most of the time, not over the things that matter, but over the things that don't matter. But the things that are not essential but that do have an impact upon us are the leadership types of things, where, as you're saying, as you're growing, you're having to learn new leadership things as you get there that you've never had to learn before, because now the size forces you to learn a skill set that you didn't require at the smaller place.
Well, and that probably was the one of the main distinctions. I just think about the pastors of the smaller church I was part of versus the larger church that I moved across the country to be part of. Even at a probably 120, that small church pastor, it was larger than he really wanted to lead. He wanted to love people and teach the Bible and just do faithful ministry. But all the leadership stuff kind of ate his lunch, and that was the part of his ministry that he ended up not really liking very much. And so I do think that does become a lid for sure for a church's ability to grow. I also don't think that that's necessarily bad, because that was a church that was healthy and vibrant and had a lot of people that over the years, especially in a college town, would come through and they'd send them out. And that was kind of their heartbeat, was we're going to grow more the kingdom through sending than, ourselves through numerical growth. But, I'm grateful for all of it.
So you've grown from small to large. About what is your average attendance right now?
This year we've been for the first time over 2,000 on a
Okay.
Sunday as a typical thing.
So you made it to what's technically called mega.
Yeah, we had a staff meeting after a couple weeks of hitting that in a row. Said, "Hey, congratulations! You all work at a mega church now," which no one wants. Nobody's like, "Oh yay!" I mean, that's mostly a bad thing. But it actually was helpful for our staff to like go, "Oh man, this like, I mean, everybody feels that it's large." Because, in any church, there's however many people come on a weekend, but then there's how many people come over the course of a month. And it's always substantially more. So, but yeah, that's about where we're at now.
And the reason I bring it up, obviously, is because church size is a big part of what this ministry is about, because there are distinct ways that we lead at different sizes of churches. And as you've mentioned, you've had to learn along the way. So before we get into the main subject of the matter, which really does have to do with your adaptation to trying to keep the place feeling small while you've gotten big, what would you say are, well, when we think about getting bigger, it is very typical in most church leadership conversations to talk about the benefits of big, or simply just to assume that there are so many benefits to getting big. But we seldom talk about what have you had to give up as you became bigger. Are there any things you miss about the smaller size? And if so, what are they, and how do you compensate for
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a long list, and it's I
that?
really actually I appreciate you bringing it up, because it is not something people bring up. It is only assumed that growth is good. That's not probably a right assumption, but that's common. And there are real pain points that come in the growth, and as a pastor, you feel weird about talking about them. It feels like the person who's like, "Boy, having all this money has just complicated my life," like nobody feels bad for that guy, but it's true, right? There are new. So like, I remember at some point realizing, when I meet someone on a Sunday, there's a very good chance I'm never going to really get to know them very well. And that grieved me, because as a church planner, like if you came to our church for a long time, there was a very good chance we were going to have coffee or lunch in the next 3 weeks if you were up for it, And I reached a point where it's like, I still am able to do that with some people, but there's a lot of people I really can't. Now they're hopefully going to get known by someone, and that's some of what we'll talk about. But I love the people. Like I kind of assumed, oh, those big church people, they don't like big church pastors, they don't like people anyway. So they're just, prima donnas. And now that I'm on the other side of it, it's like, no, I really do miss some of that with people. I think another thing that I miss and that is hard is when the church was newer and smaller, it was very easy to kind of, the way I think about it is like you pull a lever and something happens. Like I make this move, something takes place, like very quick, like, okay, let's do this, we do it. Now it feels like I pull the lever and like 16 gears have to all work together, and then
Very complicated.
maybe something happens. And
Right.
in very rare instances, I still can pull a lever and make something happen, but that's not a thing to do very often. And so I do find myself sometimes looking at the lever going, how hard am I going to have to pull this? Is it going to be worth it? And so there's a weird thing where it's like, on one hand, you're the lead pastor. There's this perception that you've kind of unlimited power. But especially in a church like ours, where we really have tried to empower staff, I oftentimes feel almost the least powerful. We could certainly debate whether that's true. I'm sure it's not, but that feeling is there sometimes. So I think the other thing that's interesting, this is true in a large church or a small church, is people assume that everything that's happening is something that the lead pastor really likes. And when you're the lead pastor, you go, no, there's tons of things I don't really like here. Like, we're not doing everything the way I would want to do it. A lot of it we're doing better than what I would want to do. And some of it I think is worse than what I would want. But there is kind of this assumption that, like, well, when you're the leader, you get your way on everything. And I think if you're living in real plurality, there's always a sense of frustration. Whereas especially in a church plant, everything really kind of was what I wanted. And so giving up a lot of those preferences, a lot of that ability to just move quickly, that's been painful. But I am grateful for what God's done.
Yeah, what you're describing feels like servant leadership because you've gone from when there's just a handful of people there and you want to do it, you do it, and everybody assumes, well, the leader knows. But when you've got the complexity of that, you're not more in charge in some ways. Because you're actually serving more people than you used to be serving before. And there are far more voices to speak into that and a far greater complexity to that. And there are certain places where you just have to give up ownership of it because if everything has to run through you, then it can't. You're going to bottleneck everything really fast, especially when you get to that size.
When the church was about 200, that was kind of still true. I mean, there really is like, I mean, you can, I heard it said a long time ago, leadership isn't getting things done, it's getting things done through other people. And so, there does become a point at which, like, whether big church or small church, if you're the hub of the wheel, it can only be a certain size circle.
And you're not pastoring well because the pastor's job is not to do the work of ministry. The pastor's job is to equip others to do the work of ministry. That's, in my one of my favorite passages in Ephesians 4, what I call the pastoral prime mandate. We're not called to do the work of ministry. Five different types of leaders are called to work together to equip God's people. It's always supposed to be about that, no matter what size it is. And it just becomes more complicated as you get larger, but it should be the same at any size church because that is the pastoral calling. So thank you for that overview and an understanding because you're coming from a different perspective than most of the folks that I interview here because most of it, since we're talking mostly to small church pastors, most come from a small church pastor perspective.
Well, and Carl, the other thing I will say is, one of the ministries I do is called Faithful and Fruitful. We're doing a couple times a year these lead pastor intensives, and most of the guys that come to those are leading churches under 300, under 500 people. And so, part of what's been fun in the last couple of years of doing that is reminding myself of like the differences, and yet going, but a lot of these muscles are the same muscle. They're just, you've used the word complicated or complex. Yeah, there's growing complexity, but leadership's leadership.
Yeah, I agree. So the reason we're talking today is because we follow each other on X on this weird platform, and every once in a while I wonder, why am I here? And then every once in a while I'll read something like what you did, and I go, that's why I'm here, because these kinds of things don't pop up the same way on Facebook or on Instagram. They pop up this way on X, on what used to be called Twitter. And it began in, I believe, March of this year, where you were anticipating an elder retreat coming up on the weekend. And you said your plan was to land on three quantitative goals for next year. And some of the options, and I'll just read a couple of them, were to potentially have a 25% increase in volunteers on every team, to have up to 60% full attendance at all three services, to aim towards 200 second-time guests. And one of them, the last one, in fact, was to have 750 unique one-on-one meetings with pastors for a meal over coffee. And you said, I don't know which three we'll pick, maybe something we haven't even thought of, but what would you prioritize? And you put that out there and you got some comments. And then after the weekend, you landed on one of those, which is going to be the main part of our conversation today. But before I even get to that, on timing, this took place in March. And in the tweet that you put out, you said for the next year. So Were you meeting in March for the next calendar year starting in January? You're talking like 10 months in advance. Is that how far in advance this meeting takes place?
No, we are operating on a fiscal year
Oh, okay.
that goes July to June. And so we're thinking about it as like our fiscal year and our ministry year kind of being that same July to June pattern, especially here in Arizona. The school year starts end of July. So really, like the school year kind of becomes July to May. You've got a little fudge there in terms of the beginning of July and June, but
Gotcha.
that's how we're thinking about it. So that March retreat was in preparation for a July, the kickoff to a July fiscal year and a July like ministry year.
Got it. So by the time this comes out, this will have been implemented for a couple months. But as we're talking now, it has not been implemented yet. So you're talking about a 4 month lead time. Is that a fairly standard lead time for long-term planning, or do you have different timelines for different types of things in long-term planning?
We typically are trying to get away as elders if we can every year. I mean, a lot of the guys are, I mean, they're busy and they have work and travel and different stuff. So it's tricky. We haven't hit it every year. We try to do it every year, and we typically try to do it 2 to 3 months before budget season, like really gets hot and heavy. If budget begins July 1st, we typically want to really have that finalized by like June 1st. So then if you back up and you go, okay, May, April, April, you're having Easter and all that stuff. So typically we're trying to then, just for the sake of schedule and stuff, we're typically trying to get away in late February or March or something like that. Because we really feel like if there are things, the way our elders really approach it is we have staff elders and non-staff elders. We have a majority of lay elders, non-staff
Okay.
elders, and I answer to them as the lead pastor, and then I'm really responsible to lead the staff. And so the elders are really thinking through protection of doctrine and vision and direction, but implementation is very much, a staff thing that they've empowered us to do. But we don't want to get too far down that, and the elders have to approve the budget. So we don't want to get too far down the planning of that process before the elder, like if we're going to say, hey, the elders set direction, we have to give them time to actually set direction. And
Got
so
it.
that's usually where we plan that. I mean, I could talk to you more about how we do those retreats, and I don't know where you want to go exactly in the conversation, but.
I do want to do that, but one of the things I'm noticing about the timing is that you have the retreat where you talk about direction in plenty of time before the budget is established so that the direction is guiding the budget rather than the budget guiding the direction.
Correct.
Okay, because that's really important for us. And in smaller churches, it's something we have to maybe work a little more consciously on because the financial crunch in the small church, of course, can be quite severe. And it can be really tempting to say yes or no to things based on whether or not we can afford it, rather than letting vision and purpose lead and having the budget follow that. But by the way it's set up on your calendar, that is an intentional choice on your part.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, we have constraints too. I mean, it's a large church, but you can't do all the things you dream about all the time. The thing is, if you plan it ahead, then you have the possibility of it. You
Right.
know, you could reallocate resources in a different way if those resources happen to be available. If they're not available, then it is what it is, and the sandbox shrinks. But you'd like to try to go, hey, what kind of sandbox would we like to play in? If other circumstances, shrink it, then they shrink it. But yeah,
Okay.
and I think just in general, I mean, that's how we've tried to do. Even when we were, young and small, we would typically try to be a few months planned out just because everything else has more margin and flexibility if you do that. So.
Okay. What I want to do is have a separate short conversation with you to put into the bonus content about how you plan and conduct leadership retreats on a semi-annual or annual basis, depending on how the churches and pastors who are listening to it want to do so. So if you're listening to this and you are interested in some how-to steps to conduct maybe an annual board or staff or elder retreat, the way you can get that is one of two ways. You can go to carlvaders.com/support and become a monthly supporting partner. And when you do, you get a whole bunch of free material, including the weekly newsletter, which gives you the code that allows you to get all of the bonus material that's only available for those who get that. The second way to get the code for that is to go to carlvaders.com/subscribe, become a free newsletter subscriber, get the free weekly newsletter, and from that, you'll get the code to listen to all the bonus content, including this with Luke. So we'll talk about giving you some practical steps to plan and conduct an annual leadership retreat for your church. But with your specific one, so you went into this leadership retreat, you had these potential ideas, you were going to pick maybe three of them, but you ended up on one rather than on three. So walk me through how the meeting went that changed you from, hey, let's do three of these to let's slightly tweak one of them and just really lean in on that one for the next year?
Well, I'll back up even a little bit before that, because this has not
Okay.
been a typical practice for us. It's not like this is something we do every year, but maybe a year and a half ago, I read a book by Donald Miller called How to Grow Your Small Business. And Miller's a, small business coach guy. And he has this whole analogy where he compares a small business to an airplane. The leadership is the cockpit, sales and marketing are the engines. The wings are the products and services that are offered. The body is your overhead. The fuel is your cash flow, right? Like that's kind of his whole thing. And it's actually a very, I mean, I have a side small business, and so it's a very helpful book for that. But one of the things he argues in there, and I'd never heard this before. I'm curious if you've ever heard this, Carl. He argues that every organization, I mean, he's talking about business, but he's saying you should have a mission statement that changes every year or two. And I've never heard that. I've only
No,
ever
that's new to
heard you have
me.
this undying, almost etched in stone mission statement. So you haven't heard that either.
No, I haven't. That's new.
Yeah. So his argument is if it's a mission, then you have to be able to accomplish it, right?
Okay.
Like if the mission is, hey, SEAL Team 6, get Osama bin Laden, you either got him or you didn't, right? Like
Right.
you hit the objective or you didn't hit the objective. And so he argues that actually like you should have like a kind of an unchanging like reason or purpose for your organization, but that your mission should actually change every year, every 2 years, every 3 years, and that you should have some numerical goals associated with it. You could have other kinds of goals too. But anyway, that argument, it just got me thinking, like, huh, that is so. I've never thought about it like that. And I
Yeah.
think one of the things that has just been frustrating, especially as a former athlete, is I liked a baseball season where it was like we had a winning record or we didn't. We made the playoffs or we didn't. Well, it wasn't this year, but maybe next year. One of the things that's so hard about church is it's just the same thing every week. I mean, you never. It's like, how are we doing? I don't know. What part of the season are we in? I don't know. I mean, even you use the
Yeah.
analogies of the Bible of planting and agriculture. It's like, well, a farmer knows when it's winter or he knows when it's spring. What season are we in? How are we doing? I don't know. Like I get jealous of our student ministry because they stop in the summer and then they relaunch in the fall and there's like this very clear like season. And so all
Yeah.
of that combined to make me go, what would it look like to come up with some kind of like, hey, for the next year, here's a quantitative numerical goal that we could try to hit that actually, if we hit it, would move something important forward. So, like in the examples you gave, right? Like we need more volunteers. So maybe that would be an appropriate thing. Or if we looked at second time guests, well, that would mean something as it relates to how we follow up with people. Or like, so it wasn't just like, how do we grow by more people, but like, how do we
Right.
achieve some numerical goals that might do something? So that's where that whole thing started. To me, it was just kind of an interesting thing. Like, what might we do? So I just brainstormed a bunch of different ideas that I thought any of these, if they happened, would move discipleship and mission forward in some positive ways. I don't want to grow for the sake of growth. None of
Yeah.
them actually were like numerical growth things. They were all way more about other stuff.
Yeah, and that's what I loved to note and noticed about it. It was a way of quantifying qualitative growth rather than just simply hitting numbers for the sake of numbers. We want people to be more mature. We want people to make better connections with each other and with Christ. What are some numerical goals we can set that would push us towards these non-quantitative values? And they all had that structure to them. So that was one of the things that caught my attention was like, okay, he's thinking in some really, really healthy ways here.
Thank you.
Before we continue, I'd like to take less than a minute to mention three important items. First, if you're new to this podcast, it's a product of helping small churches thrive at carlvaders.com. We provide encouragement and resources for pastors of the 90% of churches that aren't big through workshops, books, articles, this podcast, and more. Second, our current project is to raise approximately $20,000 to help us conduct small church pastor workshops in Indonesia, Malaysia, Austria, Switzerland, and Germany in 2025, including translating and printing one of my books, The Grasshopper Myth, into the Indonesian language to give for free to 1,000 small church pastors. The churches that need our help can typically afford it the least, so if you'd like to help us do this, you can support us at carlvaders.com/support. And third, you can subscribe to my free weekly newsletter and get all the latest resources and news at carlvaders.com/subscribe. Links for all of this will be in the show notes. Now, back to my interview.
So, yeah, I think we were thinking three objectives because Donald Miller had three in his, you know, okay. in his book. It was like, we will do gotcha. Blank, blank, and blank by this period of time because this, you know, like right. that's kind of how he framed a mission statement, you know? So yeah. I think that's how I was thinking about it. I got a lot of really good feedback actually from that initial post. There were kind of two things. One that was really helpful was a number of people pointing out the difference between lead goals and lag goals. Right. Mm-hmm. A lead goal is something you can like really control the input of. A lag goal is something that like, well, that's sort of downstream. So for instance, you know, hosting 80 people in Exploring Christianity, that's kind of a lag goal, right? A lead goal might right. be, we're going to personally invite 200 people to Exploring Christianity, right? So that was a helpful thing to go like, do we want to set our goals on things that we have more actionable control over or not? So that was one piece of feedback. The other one I just totally expected, which was the snark. You know, one person said, oh, look, they KPI'd the church, you know, the key performance indicators, which are common yeah. in the marketplace, common in business. And that's just always, anytime you talk about objectives and goals and quantitative and blah, 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 you're just going to get that feedback.
Especially on X. Yeah.
Yeah, especially on X, but also in real life. I mean, and yeah. like we said, we're a church staff. No one is like, oh, we work at a mega church. Yay. It's like, everyone's a little suspicious of this. So the way we ended up getting from 3 to 1 was we were really talking about like, okay, here's all these different things we could do. And to me, there were really two key pieces of it. One was I wanted a goal that everyone in our staff could participate in. So right. if we had a goal of, you know, 80 people in Exploring Christianity, only a handful of people really are going to contribute to that okay. meaningfully.
Gotcha.
If it's like, we want this number of people to go through some sort of parenting discipleship, well, only some people get to play. A bigger one was like, okay, we want to raise our volunteers by 25%. Okay, now everybody's going to probably have some skin in that game. But whatever it was, I just wanted something where it's like, and by the way, Carl, this is not, we're not, I mean, it's on X. Most of the people in our church are not on X. So like, this is right. not something we're broadcasting. I'm not afraid of it. I'm not hiding it either, but it's not like I'm not going to get up on a Sunday and go, here's our goal for the year. This is really an internal staff elder, you know, leadership type goal. So the first thing was we wanted people like everyone gets to play. And then the second thing, we were mindful of culture and going, hey, this idea of a quantitative objective, this is new for us. We're in this season of growth. There's already some suspicion around, oh, are we just going to become some big machine? So that really drove us to say, well, let's pick a goal that is very pastoral, that's very personal. As we just talked about it as a team, we just went, you know what? You can't argue with something that says we want to meet individually with as many people as possible.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, our covenant members. We have about 750 covenant members. And mm-hmm. so we started running the math. And basically the way we figured it out was like, if all the full-time people met with someone once a week, and if all the part-time people met with someone once a month, it would come out to around 1,000 meetings. And so that's what we ended up landing on, was let's have this objective that, you know, between July to June, we're going to meet with 1,000 distinct people in the church. You know, we say for coffee or a meal, but it could be in an office. It doesn't have to be one-on-one. It could be one-on-two, but it probably can't be 1-on-6. And really trying to prioritize our covenant members and really trying to, you know, say, hey, if we're going to do some sort of KPI, let's have it be very about like the personal side of ministry, not just the numbers.
Right. So you're talking about staff and elders, leaders of your church meeting one-on-one or one-on-two, I assume, like with a couple, yeah. married couple, with one half of your Sunday morning attendance and probably about one third of the total number of people that consider your church their home church. Would that be about accurate?
Yeah, that's probably right.
Yeah. Okay. That is a very one that is, it does hit all of the markers you said. It's a very personal goal. Everybody's involved in all of that. It does help to increase the relational IQ of the congregation. It also, to me, feels like a way of helping the church as it gets bigger to still feel small, because you do have some connection with the people. I mean, how many people go to a church of 2,000 and not only don't ever meet a staff member or have at least not have an opportunity for a deep conversation with a staff member, but many of them don't even care if they do. They're just there to attend and to leave. So what do you anticipate as you're looking towards doing this? What do you anticipate, first of all, that this is going to do for your church members, and then secondly, for your leaders?
Man, those are great questions. I mean, And I imagine someone's also listening to this going like, wait, you're only going to meet with a third of the people in your church? Like, that's why I hate large churches. So if someone's thinking that, like, I get it. Like, if I could figure out a way to go like, hey, we're going to meet with every single person that calls this church home, at least, like, that'd be my heart, So anyway, I realize some people just, they're disgusted.
You're going to do as large as is reasonable to aim for in a calendar year, anyway. To expect a staff to meet with more than 1,000 people in a calendar year is to shorten, well, first of all, to drive your staff crazy with all the stuff they got to do. And then secondly, to shorten the value of each one of those meetings. This is a big but a reasonable goal, it seems to me.
Yeah, so I mean, what I hope it does for the people is that they just feel more known and more loved and more of a connection with somebody that really does care, because I think our staff and our elders really do care. What we've found over the years that, I mean, every church has like, I think Rick Warren had like the community and the crowd and the core and his concentric circles. Well, the core people really are the people who, if you trace it, you go, they're core because at some point they had a key relationship with a leader. That's how they became core. And a lot of our core was hollowed out in 2020. A lot of, I mean, just so much disruption we all face. So, like, we're really, in a sense, kind of, this is like rebuilding the core of the church. And so, I think for those people, I think it will surface needs. I think there will be pain points that are going on in people's lives that people have felt invisible or unseen. And I'm excited, but also honestly a little bit nervous about the pastoral care that will surface from it. But I think I'm more excited than scared. And then for our church, I do think the opportunity to have relationships, to feel like you've said, to make the large church feel small. I also think some of the other goals we have of like, we want to be able to increase the number of volunteers we have. And I think we aim at personal connection and we'll get more volunteers. I think we aim at personal connection, we'll get more buy-in and committed givers. Yeah, we aim at personal connection, we'll get more word of mouth. Hey, you should join me at my church sometime, invitations from people. So I think that's what we're aiming at. Now, the thing I've said with the staff, very, I'm going to say this all year long, is like, we will not neglect the people who need care and help just because somebody already met with them. Like we have this, we're trying to keep track of like 1,000 distinct people. We don't want to go, well, you really need help and you really need care and you really need time, but we already met with you and we have other people to get to. Like, we're just not, we're not going to do that. We're going to really have to fight to try to not make this just like a check the box kind of thing. And, so I think that's something that we'll have to just pay attention to. But I don't want the fear of that potentially happening to keep us from at least aiming at something.
How do you plan to, or do you have a plan in place yet to follow up on this, like at your weekly staff meeting or at a monthly elders meeting? Is there going to be, hey, who did you meet with this week or this month, and tell us these stories and share some of that? Or how is that likely to play out, do you think?
Yeah, well, and even just this conversation, I'm aware of like a false sense of accomplishment. Like, we haven't done diddly squat yet. It's kind of like the person who has a plan to lose weight, but it starts on Monday. So I feel like we should probably do a follow-up in a year and go, how'd it go?
Yeah, I plan on it, by the way.
Oh,
You'll get a
cool.
call. Yeah, I want to
Great.
know how this went.
I'll ignore your call if it didn't go well. Yeah, so one of our just really great volunteers built out a spreadsheet that has all the, I mean, it's got all kinds of stuff, but it basically has like all of the covenant members in it. And there's a place for staff to kind of like reserve people. And so we let our part-time people kind of do that first because they're going to have a little less availability to do that. And so they're kind of in the process of going, here's people I know I want to meet with. So we're going to kind of try to track it somewhat in that system. There's a place to for some notes and like any follow-ups and action steps that are needed. And honestly, I'm not convinced it'll be a great tool, but I think it'll be pretty good. And it's like, I don't know. We'll try. We'll see. And maybe in a couple months we'll go, oh, we got to pivot to something else, but that's okay. Then the other thing we're going to do is we're going to build out kind of a big like poster kind of thing that's basically like our logo. So our name is Ironwood Church. Ironwood is a kind of tree, and our logo is like a stamp, like a tree. Like if you were to look at an architectural document and you'd see like trees on it, they would be like a stamp. So we're going to have a big, big thing that we'll essentially just bring out for staff meetings that'll be our logo, but divided up into like 1,000 little mosaic pieces. And so as we meet with people, we'll kind of fill that in, and over the course of the year, see that grow. Kind of the, it's the thermometer, just a little different. I told our design guys, like, what would be awesome would be if we could put each person's picture in that. But I also thought the tracking and the doing all that could be just a nightmare. So we'll skip that for now. So
Yeah, and you may have people feel like it's feeling kind of intrusive. You've got my photo
totally.
now, and what are you going to do with
Yeah.
it and all of that? So, no, I hear where you, but I love the idea that there is going to be a way of keeping track of it and of celebrating this, and that it's celebrating relational connection as a primary thing. With, as you said, I agree with you. I think out of this, you're going to get more volunteers, you're going to get a high, an increased rate of giving. But everything about the way this has been phrased, both online and in your this conversation today, tells me you're seeing that as a secondary byproduct and not as the primary reason for doing this, which is one of the things I really appreciate about this approach. You really are desiring to help the bigger church feel small and make a greater relational connection among people.
Yeah, that's
Okay.
exactly right. And I'm excited too for our staff. Like, I think a lot of our staff meetings will be creating a little bit of space to go, hey, who is somebody you met with who is just awesome? And you see God at work in them, and they have kind of some sort of Hebrews 11 hall of faith thing going that encouraged you. And I think like the culture that it'll build to sort of brag on people, there's some incredible stories. And I mean, people are carrying around some incredible faith stuff that like nobody knows. They're also carrying around some incredible pain that nobody knows. And so it may end up pretty overwhelming, but I'm excited to try it and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I'm really interested in tracking this and seeing how that goes, because I think it's something that a whole bunch of other churches can learn from, large and small, about the importance of connection and about the importance then of sharing those connections with the broader team. It reminds me somewhat of what I wrote about in Small Church Essentials, where we used the GIFT acronym for years. And in our small church, I encouraged all of our leaders to either greet somebody new each week, or introduce two people who didn't know each other to each other, or follow up on someone that you met recently, or thank someone for a job well done, and pick at least one of those to do every Sunday.
Oh, that's so good, Carl. Man, I love it.
Every time we had a staff meeting, then the opening question was, who did you gift this week? And everybody on the staff was required to say, here's who I greeted, or here are two people I introduced, or here's someone I followed up on, or here's someone I thanked. By doing that, one, we kept each other accountable, and two, we got to share these stories and learn about people that we otherwise would not have learned about. So what you're doing is that kind of idea, but scaled up to your size, because to do the GIFT acronym at a church of 2,000 on Sunday is not as viable as what you're talking about. So it's got a very similar feel to it. So the idea of sharing a story or two each time you meet that comes out of those conversations, I highly recommend, because it was such a blessing to us when we did that kind of a thing.
That's great.
Huge.
I'm so excited to steal that acronym. So
Yeah, there you go. Enjoy.
I'll be teaching that to our staff very soon.
Oh, terrific. Yeah, it's in Small Church Essentials. So if anybody's listening who hasn't heard that yet, you can pick it up in that book. Before we get to the lightning round, I do want to mention, you mentioned earlier you got some comments back, and I did notice when you did put out that here's what we're going to do. We're going to meet one-on-one with at least 1,000 church members over the next year. One of the first, if not the first response to that on X was, if I can't know and be known by the pastor, I need a smaller church. And your gracious response was, that's a good thing to know about yourself. Everyone has a preferred size culture when it comes to church, so the key is to find what fits. So first of all, thank you for responding to someone who may have been trolling for snark. I'm not going to say they were, but they may have been. It felt a little bit like trolling. But if you who wrote that are out there, I'm not judging your heart. I'm just looking at, that's kind of the thing people are saying when they're trolling. So if that wasn't your intention, then I'll trust you that it wasn't. But it felt like that. But you didn't take the bait. So talked about that response. That's a good thing to know about yourself. Everyone has a preferred size culture. Talk a little bit about that, knowing what your size culture is for church members and for pastors as well.
Well, probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with Tim Keller's classic article on leadership and church size dynamics. If anyone hasn't heard that, you should go download it. It's just really good.
And we'll drop it in the show notes as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one of his arguments there is that everyone has a church size culture that it just is. It's not good or bad. And there are good things about small churches and there are bad things about small churches and vice on the big church, right? Like good is good, bad is bad. So when that person said that, I just think like, yeah, like if that's how someone feels, like they certainly wouldn't want to be at our church. And that's okay. Like we're one little piece of the kingdom of God here. And, our job's to be the faithful ring toe or whatever we are in the body of Christ in our community. And so I think there's just way too many empty calories spent on criticizing the size of a church. And I just go like, figure out what you feel comfortable with and what you want to be part of, and then have that be part of it. And when you attach moral weight to it, I think that starts to get ugly.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I appreciate your kind and gracious response to something that, especially in that format, people often respond to in unkind ways. So let's take a look at the lightning round. We got four questions that every guest has to deal with. So let's go through them. First of all, what are the biggest changes you've seen in your field of ministry in the last few years, and how have you adapted to them?
What comes to mind there is in our community, we're in suburban Phoenix, and I feel like we've seen a real rise in the non-Christian conservative. I think there had been an assumption for a long time that if people were secular-minded, that they were progressive and that they were to the political left or culturally political left. And I think increasingly I'm seeing like people who are not Christians have a very kind of secular worldview in a lot of ways, but are, more aligned with like a political or cultural conservatives. And so that's something we're trying to figure out. How do we reach those people? How do we speak in a language that they understand, but also challenge the assumptions they have with the truth and with the gospel? And so that's a lesson that's kind of in process.
Yeah, a lot of people conflate the two. It's good to hear that you're seeing very clearly seeing the distinctions between the two and are trying to step into that space. That's great. Second question, what free or cheap resource like an app or website has helped you lately that you'd recommend for small church ministry?
There's a Chat GPT. I don't know if we've done Chat GPT with your folks here or where we are in that whole thing. But there's a thing called Sermon Illustrator by Daryl Stetler. Daryl
Oh.
Stetler, too. Do you know Daryl?
Daryl's a good friend and has been on this podcast. Absolutely.
Oh, great. Well, yeah, and I can send you a link that but this one of the guys in the preaching lab that I lead, he sent me this. And it's a very helpful, he has basically helped curate a prompt on Chat GPT where you can put in a verse and some different themes you're kind of planning on preaching, and it essentially curates different sermon illustrations from history, from math and science, from art, from all kinds of stuff. It really, really wants you to use the one about Michael Jordan getting cut from his high school team. Like that one comes up a lot as I've looked at it. Yeah, I found that for illustrations to be a really helpful tool. I don't think AI should basically help you write your sermons, but I think it's really great on the illustration side.
Daryl Stetler is a small church pastor in Oklahoma City, has become a really good friend, has been on the podcast a couple times already, and is probably the one of the smartest pastors I know for how to use AI well. Not like you say, not to write the sermon for you, but as a research assistant tool. Really, really helpful. And he's written a whole piece on that. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes for sure. And we'll probably have Daryl on sometime fairly soon to walk through exactly how to use that from the perspective of the guy who actually created it. So Daryl will be thrilled that he got a shout out from you. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
great.
Yeah. Third one, what's the best piece of ministry advice you've ever received?
Christ died for the church, you don't have to.
Oh,
And that came
yeah.
from Tom Schrader, who was the founding pastor at the church that I was hired at as a young 20-something. I remember very early into that ministry going into his office and being like, how do you do this? Like, this thing is never done. There's always someone more to meet with. There's always something more you could do. There's always, and he laughed, said, yeah, ministry is a black hole, but Christ died for the church. You don't have to.
I love that. What a beautiful way to phrase that principle. I love that. That's great. Well, from that to the other side, what's the funniest or weirdest thing you've ever seen in church?
Oh man, I'm not sure. There's so many stories I've heard of that I feel like I was there for, but probably actually didn't happen. I think weird has probably mostly my family has had a really great experience with people at church, but my wife did have this one time when she was pregnant with, I think, our third or no, our fourth child. And so she was bringing in these, three little kids. She's pregnant. She was like almost due, she's like bent over going through a diaper bag. And some guest services volunteer is taking some new family around the church. And she stops and goes, here's our pastor's wife. And it was like, my wife felt like she was in the zoo, like, here's this creature, And it was kind of this like, and she, mostly our people are really great and sensitive and really honoring to our family. But occasionally people can be pretty socially inept.
Yeah, that's amusing. But if that's as badly as you've been treated, you've done well.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
I could share some other stories, but
Yeah, no, I know, but it doesn't fit the
I have
context.
largely
Yeah.
been treated well. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I hear you. Me too. If anybody wants to follow up with anything with you, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Yeah, go to faithfulandfruitful.com, and a lot of my resources are there. Contact information, podcasts, just lots of resources there that we try to make available.
And we'll put links to all of the things we've talked about, including that and including Ironwood Church in the show notes as well for everybody. We are going to head into bonus material now. So if you do want the bonus material, we're going to talk for 5 or 10 minutes about how to put together that annual elders or staff retreat. What are the advantages of it? What are some tips about how to do that well? And the links to how to get all of that bonus material to, by becoming either a financial partner or a newsletter subscriber will be in the show notes as well. Luke, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for your wisdom. And I am looking forward to talking to you in about a year, see how this grand experiment turns out for you.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
There's so much that I appreciate about Luke's approach to church leadership, and especially how he sees both the positives and the challenges of a church that grows to such a large size. So here's my takeaway for the typical Church Lobby listener. If you're pastoring a small church and would love to have the problems that Luke has, I have two things to say. First of all, that kind of thinking will only lead to frustration. Bigger is not better. Smaller is not less than. And Jesus knows what he's doing in your church just as much as he knows what he's doing in the church that Luke serves. Secondly, when you're focused on the numerical growth you want to have, you can easily stop appreciating the ministry you currently have. Yes, it's good to have goals, but like we talked about with Luke, those goals need to be about deepening relationships with God and with each other, not about increasing attendance numbers. This episode was produced by Veronica Beaver. It was edited by Phil Vaders. Original theme music was written and performed by Jack Wilkins of jackwilkinsmusic.com. The graphic design is by Solomon Joy. And me, I'm Carl Vaders, and I hope to talk with you again in the church lobby.